Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and welcome to the new year. Hope everyone's 2026 is off to a phenomenal start. We are recording on Tuesday, January the 6th, and we are going to wrap up the preview of the offseason activities throughout the major leagues, touching this time on the NL West, and we're going to take our time with it. To join me in recapping everything and diving in is our man at Bronx Yankees 23, Mike Mager. Mike, what's happening?
Hey, Vlad, looking forward to this. So we got a whole pod on mostly one division. That includes your Dodgers. And I don't know if you could tell, but in honor of this podcast, I throw on my Tony Gwynn t-shirt. So I am prepared to talk about the NL West.
I did not notice it when we were in the green room, and then now I just see you kind of lift up a little bit, and I see it. The villains of Southern California, earmuffs, Sammy Reed. Sorry, but you know how it is. We are here at this point in the season where there are a handful of very important free agents still available, and it almost seems like one domino falls and then the rest will. And it's sort of the same few teams fighting for a lot of these guys. I'll touch on them in a second, but the big ones, on the pitcher side, there's Ranger Suarez, Framber Valdez, and Zach Gallen. And then sort of mid-tier options, Eugenio Suarez, JT Realmuto, Luis Arias, Paul Goldschmidt, Harrison Bader. And I just threw Michael Kopech in the mix because he's somebody that can maybe steal something there. As far as some save opportunities. But the big four are Kyle Tucker, Alex Bregman, Bo Bichette, and Cody Bellinger. So let's talk about these four guys, what we're reading through the tea leaves and how we think these dominoes may fall.
Yeah, it's really interesting because, we had a flurry of activity in December, and since then it's been very quiet, no new news on any of these guys. And you're right, it just seems like they're all kind of waiting on each other to set the market, if you will, right? I think Tucker's going to go for the highest amount by far. And it really is the same teams, It seems like the Toronto Blue Jays are still intent on adding a big bat, whether it's Tucker or Bichette. A number of teams are in on Bregman. The Yankees, who've done like nothing this offseason, I think really would like Bellinger back. Then you have the Mets and Dodgers, who are just, kind of quiet, but you almost expect them to make a splash in free agency. The Dodgers, we'll get to it, but they signed Edwin Diaz, but haven't really added much else of significance. And the Mets have had a pretty disappointing offseason so far, I think, if you ask most of their fans. So you kind of expect both of those teams to make an impact move, but the number of impact players is starting to dwindle.
And with Kyle Tucker, of course, the Toronto Blue Jays are firmly in the conversation. It sounds like the Blue Jays are going to settle in on one of Tucker, Bregman, or Bichette. Their new signing over the last week, Kazuma Okamoto, is currently listed at third base, but he really could mix in over in different positions there for them and be more of a utility guy, utility veteran. And so obviously, Bregman, Bichette, Tucker, all any of those guys would work. Tucker, of course, in consideration still for the Dodgers, if they can make it work. It is a little tough even for them money-wise. And then even the Mets now are in the picture. There obviously would be an awesome signing for them. Alex Bregman in conversation with the Red Sox. I think the Diamondbacks have kind of fallen back a little bit, but again, you never know. Bo Bichette seems like either the Jays or the Red Sox, and then Bellinger. It's funny, I've had up my Cody Bellinger poster up on, it's like a picture that I picture that I've had in my office for a while, and I didn't have the heart to take it down, even though he hasn't been a Dodger in quite some time. And I recently took it down, And it'd be funny if he re-signed with them, but most likely he's going to end up on a New York team.
Yeah, I would think so. What's interesting, I think, is Bichette. I've probably heard the least about him of those four big hitters. And if Tucker does, in fact, go to Toronto, I wonder where Bichette winds up. Because, you know, I guess maybe Boston would then go after him, or maybe another team. But his market seems less defined than the others, at least publicly.
And Bregman and Bichette have similar ADPs. They're in the 100, 120 range typically. And both feel like they're a little bit underpriced, especially with Bichette essentially being right there with among the hits leaders, tied for second last season, despite missing a whole bunch of games. And then Bregman, just in a little bit of a down year, also was hurt a little bit. But their profiles are similar in that neither are really going to help you in the stolen base category. They are just plate discipline hitting monsters. And so in points leagues, if you're looking at underdog, like anytime I need a middle infielder in that sort of like, you know, 70 to 100 range, I'm always looking at one of those guys. They're 12, 1300 point producers easily. And that's kind of even in like a mid-year for them. So a lot of upside with them in those underdog drafts, by the way. You can, if you're new, if you want to try the underdog drafts right now, the $5 contests are still running. You can use code FTN as a new user and get some money back there. But then the dingers are going to come out on underdog very soon. I think they're still discussing what the new price point of that's going to be, about $10 or $15 per entry with a big, massive grand prize. I've got currently 40 slow drafts going on underdog. You can max at 150. I don't think I'll get to 150. Maybe I can get to 70, but like, it's just awesome. Anytime I open my phone, I'm on the clock at a different draft. And, you know, I've got my own rankings preset in there, the VDPs, and it's been fun. I'm really enjoying the underdog stuff.
Yeah, some guys I'm on a never-ending text thread with. We have an abbreviation, ABD, always be drafting. And sounds like that's what you're doing.
Yes, sir. I need to get back on the NFBCs. I've been had so many gladiators, and now I'm currently in just one draft champions. That is moving pretty slowly. We've got somebody even in there complaining, pointing out clock times, how long it's taken somebody others to draft. But I think I've had one pick in the last 2 days. So sometimes you get up, end up in those drafts. So time to get back on the DC streets. But we've got a lot of content that we're producing over here. As a matter of fact, Mike, you just had the first part of a 2-part series come out on ftnfantasy.com. You've got the player pool overview. You did a great job with it last year, and now you've got one that's out, just came out today, Tuesday, as we record, and another one, the second part of it, coming out later in the week.
Yeah, this is I did this article last year, and you know, with fantasy football ending, I think a lot of people are jumping into drafts now, maybe for the first time this off season, and this article kind of gives a high level overview of each of the positions, which ones are strong or weak, or you know, different. It mentions some of the players that may be jumping out to me as either over or undervalued, and you know, different approaches in terms of what positions might be a little easier to wait on and which ones you should not be waiting on. So that's kind of the intent behind that article.
So Mike's are out. Mike's first article is out. We also have Lucas Beery's series on the Sinking Your Battleship series. So this reviews by position players that we should be avoiding, players that are overpriced. And in this first article, he runs through the corner infielders he's avoiding and also touches on his hit rate from last season. So he ran through all of his players that he picked at all positions last year and had a pretty nice success rate. And it's funny because there were some players in his group of fades last year that I was like, man, I really don't want to see that. I'm big on them. And Lucas ended up being right. And so now again, I'm, you know, scared to click on his articles because there are names that I like that are in there, but a lot of it just makes so much sense.
Yeah, no, it's a great article. I just went through it earlier today, and I confess there are some guys there I do like. So I'll have to take another look at them.
And then I've got something coming out on Wednesday Not just something. It's actually my favorite article of the year to write, believe it or not, more so than this year's Yelich one. And it's my late round profitable hitters. And that's something that usually comes out in mid-December. This time, this is coming out here in early January, a little bit later of a viewpoint to write it, where I'm a lot more comfortable with the player pool and have some really good targets and just look at the history of players that have truly smashed beyond the 250 ADP mark and sort of what the archetypes are for, you know, what we're looking for. And so, you know, keep an eye out for that. That's going to drop on Wednesday. Dan Thompson's going to get the pleasure of writing the late round pitchers profitable article. That'll come out sometime next week. And we've just got a lot of really great content. You can get 10% off right now. GUT26 is a good promo code for that. We've got top 500 rankings. The projections are out. Underdog rankings, everything you need. We will take great care of you.
Yeah, and I think those articles that you and Dan are working on now are really important topics for people to consider. I mean, we spend so much time talking about the top of the draft board and focusing on the stars and where you rank different players, but probably the biggest differentiator between teams that win leagues versus teams that finish in the middle or lower are whether you're hitting some of the late round gems. And so those are important topics to cover.
Lots of good stuff coming your way. We are going to run through the National League West teams, and let's start at the top. My Los Angeles Dodgers, not a lot of activity in the offseason. They did re-sign playoff hero and veteran Miguel Rojas. They added Michael Ciani, formerly in a center field battle that he lost to Victor Scott on the Cardinals last spring. He is he's on a minor league contract. And, of course, they signed the big closer, Edwin Diaz, which moves Tanner Scott to setup man. Of course, the legendary Clayton Kershaw retired. As we speak, he's in conversation to be part of a major broadcast team, which will be interesting. And then they lost a lot of guys, a lot of relievers and starters, Tony Gonsolin, Evan Phillips, Michael Kopech, and then Kirby Yates over with the Angels. And then, of course, the failed Michael Conforto experiment also took place. And I don't know where he's going to land. I don't know. In the States, KBO, who knows?
Yeah, could be. Yeah, no, not a lot. Other than Edwin Diaz, it's been a relatively quiet offseason for the Dodgers. They did lose a number of relievers, but when you have Diaz and Tanner Scott, I mean, they should be set for next year. They get Alex Vesia back, who was fantastic last year. And, you know, maybe we'll see about Evan Phillips, too.
I mean, just kind of starting at the top here with Shohei Ohtani, who is essentially the consensus number one fantasy draft pick, stole fewer bases in the second half of last year, getting back into pitching. Let me ask you, if NFBC drafts, so you've got just a whole bunch of drafts coming up, a mix of DCs, OCs, whatever it is. Let me ask you this twofold. If you had 10 drafts where you knew you had the number one pick, how many times would you take Ohtani? And then who else, I guess, would be the alternative? And then what if you had the second part of this question? Say you were on your fifth number one pick and you had taken Ohtani in the first four. What would you do with that fifth number one pick?
Okay. So in real life, I'm one for one. I'm taking Ohtani with the number one pick. I've gotten it once this year. I would probably take Ohtani. To me, he's the preferred number one pick. I would probably take him probably like 6 times out of 10. I think I would maybe my second choice, who I would take if I'm not taking Ohtani, would be Aaron Judge. But I think you can make a case for Bobby Witt Jr. You could honestly make a case for Tarik Skubal as well. I would probably have a couple of slices of Judge and maybe a share of Witt in the 10. And one more name I'd add on, I guess, is if we get to spring training and Acuna is running and totally healthy and looking good, I think he could join that conversation as well, honestly.
Yeah, that sounds fair. I think I'm in a similar boat. Probably 7 of 10 Otanis if I knew I had 10 picks. Probably go with Judge with all the others, even though, of course, I do think Witt has a high upside and potential to be number one. And honestly, we've been the high folks on Ronald Acuña Jr., which really isn't a huge take or stretch. It's just funny seeing him being able to grab him at 8, 9 overall on occasion in some of these drafts where we are betting on that. Hopefully everything is going to be fine with him, but I think he could very easily be the number one pick. He's been that before. He's done it before. And if I have a 4 pick, it's Acuña all the way for me every time. And if you're looking at any projection system, you'll see Otani and Judge pretty close. I think it was Chris Towers from CBS. He was talking the other day. Think about if you were in a league where you didn't have the pitching option for Otani, or where either he's separated or you can't have a pitcher, it becomes a lot closer. Because any projection system, you're looking at two guys that have a valuation, dollar apart, 42, 43 versus, 58, 59, depending on what kind of format you're looking at. You get probably more stability with batting average, which is a more scarce category there with Aaron Judge. Home runs, both 50 home run guys, which is something to be said these days. So, yeah, I mean, it's tough. And again, really, what does it come down to? It's going to be health. If both stay healthy, they'll both be up there. They'll both be really, really good.
The one thing I'd add is I think it is a clear tiebreaker, Otani's ability to pitch. I dug into him a little bit recently before I made that number one pick. And although he only pitched 47 innings last year, he was fantastic. He was dominant, 33% strikeout rate. I think people forget what an accomplished pitcher he is. And so even if you're drafting him primarily for hitting, just the ability to, use him as a pitcher during the half weeks, the first week of the season, maybe the All-Star week if he's starting as a pitcher, if he has a two-start week, or, come August and September, if your hitting is strong and your pitching is weak, the ability to throw him in as a pitcher as needed, that's valuable stuff. So to me, that's a tiebreaker that pushes me to lean Otani at the first pick.
What about the two aging veterans, Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman, both of whom are very affordable, at least in relation to previous year's prices, where they're just coming off. Mookie Betts definitely came off a season where he struggled, and he's 33 right now. Freddie Freeman, even older, 36, of course, playoff hero once again. These guys are both incredible hitters, but are, not the guys they once were. And, just looking at their ADPs and where they're going these days, are in the 40 to 70 range. Betts is a little higher. Where are you on either of these two? Are you interested? Do you think you have a built-in anti-West Coast bias, or do you just not operate like that? No biases in fantasy.
No biases in fantasy. I think to succeed at in the high stakes arena, you really have to make sure you try to get rid of all those biases. At this point, I have either one or two shares of Freeman, and when I'm seeing him in the fifth round in draft, he becomes a consideration for me more so than Mookie, who isn't falling quite as far. I think part of it for me is just kind of priorities. I sometimes struggle in drafting enough stolen bases, and so kind of taking bets and filling my shortstop with a player who I think maybe, isn't going to run that much, I kind of struggle with a little bit. I'm also just a little concerned, is the high average going to be there if he's not running? I don't know how big of a power bat he still can be. I mean, he's obviously still a really strong player. And last year, I think part of his performance was health related. Got off to a rough start with that virus that caused him to lose a lot of weight But I am a little nervous drafting Betts, or at least so far. I need to dig into him a little more. Freeman looks still largely like the guy who I've been drafting for years and years. And to me, you know, I put a lot of value in trying to maintain a strong average base. And I think Freeman can still do that. He still has, you know, at least decent power, 20 to 25 home run power. I think the counting stats will be there in that lineup. So maybe it's also partly a reflection of first base being a little weaker in star power compared to shortstop, where there's just so many highly desirable options. But at least early on, I'm kind of interested in Freeman when he falls, and I haven't come close to pulling the trigger yet on Betts. Not saying that's right, but that's just my initial reaction.
Yeah, and there's of course the fact that you of what you're giving up, the opportunities and options of players that you're passing on. That's ADP 64, and at that point, you've got half the team has a shortstop at this point. So I mean, even, you know, between Bobby Witt, Ellie, Gunnar Henderson, Lindor, Zach Neto, Trey Turner, and I guess even CJ Abrams will go ahead of Betts in some drafts. At that point, you know, you're passing up good pitching. You've got a couple of good catchers there. You got some closers. So I understand it makes a lot of sense, and kind of hoping that we just don't know. We don't know if we think he's going to be a $25 player, $30 player. Like, what's the distribution of those stats? That's the hardest part. Like, you know, it weighs differently every year with him, with the, you know, where he's in the hitting in the order, his home runs versus stolen bases, just like everything is, you know, changes every single year. So Freeman, I do like a little bit better, as you were saying, I'm on board there. What about two guys in the outfield there? You've got a falling star in Teoscar Hernandez, where he had an ADP in October, somewhere closer to 100, 110. Now it's closer to 150. And there are a lot of signs, a lot of things in his profile and last season where we're seeing a decline with Teoscar, and especially defense, not all that great. And on the flip side, there's Andy Paez, who in my first iteration of rankings, he just didn't make sense to me for where he was going. I felt like an overpay for the season that he had last season. And I just didn't think he belonged in that group of outfielders, or he was going around 120. I thought he was more of a, you know, post 150 guy. Any strong thoughts on either Teoscar Hernandez or Andy Paez?
Yeah, so far I have not been that interested in Paez yet. I mean, maybe part of it is I'm overly influenced by the fact that they benched him essentially in the World Series because he had such a horrible playoffs. I don't want to put too much weight into that, but I'm not sure he's ready to be drafted in the, you know, kind of top 10 rounds. And Teoscar, on the other hand, I do have either one or two shares of, and I think he's fallen into an area that I'm pretty comfortable drafting him if looking for power. You know, he'll be hitting higher up in the lineup. You know, last year he had 25 homers and he missed, you know, over a month, I think it was. I think the counting stats will still be there. He could be a, you know, a 3,100 type bat still. And by then, you know, I think a lot of the stronger outfielders are off the board, and I'm trying not to wait too long on the position. And so at least a couple of times I've been very tempted to draft him.
One other guy, I'm with you. I'm into Teoscar at a fallen price, not into Paez at where he's going. So I will not probably have any shares. There is another outfielder on this team who's a really interesting name. His name is Ryan Ward. He's in an eighth round pick of the Dodgers way back in 2019. And it would be really nice to see him get some opportunities. He was essentially he was a top three hitter in the minors in AAA last season. And he has been such, just absolutely crushing it for years and years. He hits the ball hard. He's a 90-plus EV guy. 45-48% hard hit rate. Last season, just an insane year. In 143 games, he drove in 122 runs with 36 bombs, had 16 stolen bases and 113 steals. He went 3,311 the previous season, and then 20 plus home runs each of the two seasons before that. So he's been a beast. There has been talk of Brandon Gomes, the GM, has been, Dodgers GM, has been talking about him potentially getting some opportunities. And the one thing with him is, yeah, he is going to be turning 28, one of those late bloomers. But if you're in draft champions, just, you know, move him up your board a little bit. I don't know if like top 500, probably not, but I think somebody, a name to consider.
Yeah, I think that's a great call out. You know, just looking at his stats, I mean, he hit 70 homers in the last two seasons. You would think on any other team in baseball, he would have gotten a chance already. But the Dodgers are stacked. So I'm not sure what's stopping him. Maybe he fields like a DH, but I the stats look fantastic. So yeah, so it's a late round flyer in the DC. You could do a lot worse.
On the pitching side, there's obviously there's a lot to talk about here, and it's always an interesting topic. The Dodgers pitchers, will or will they not go six man? They promise they're going to start that way every year. A bunch of guys get hurt. Feels like there were less injuries for them last year, but of course, you know, Glasnow with the typical games missed, Blake Snell. But I mean, let's start with Yamamoto. Like, what is it about, like, is there something I need to get out of my sort of fantasy process makeup where I have a hard time buying in on like this incredible season when I was already in on it last year? It's almost, you know, like taking my money and running. But I don't have a justification for it. Like, I have them ranked there in the top five along with Christopher Sanchez. But when I'm in draft, I'm catching myself. If I want a pitcher, I'm taking Sanchez over him. I can't put my finger on it. I don't know what it is. I don't ever want to say, oh, I'm going to, you know, predicting someone's going to get hurt. We just don't know these things unless it's like Byron Buxton or Tyler O'Neill. So where are you and Yamamoto, and where do you think, you know, can you help talk me through this?
Yeah, I mean, I think right now he's still my SP4 behind the big three. You know, he missed time in 2024, but he's been pretty durable throughout his career. I mean, he had several years in Japan where he threw over 190 innings, which is rare for Japanese pitchers because they have a shorter season and they make less starts at least. And, you know, he went 173 last year. Ratio's fantastic, strong strikeout rate. You know, his control was a little weaker last year. The only, you know, maybe negative on him is, you know, he pitched a lot of innings last year when you include the playoffs. And if they go six man, he gets less starts than maybe some of the other aces who are in five man rotations. But I don't know, the way I look at it is he's their best pitcher. I think a lot of the others in the rotation have injury concerns, so I can see them using a five-man more than they might prefer. And, you know, what he may lose in a little bit of innings, he should make back in wins if the Dodgers are as strong as we anticipate them being. So, you know, I don't think he stands above the others. Like, I don't think, you know, he's like head and shoulders above Sanchez or Sale or DeGrom, Gilbert, whatever you want to put into that second group. I think he's kind of right there in that group. I don't put him in the top three at all, but I think right now he's still probably at the top of that second tier for me. But I wouldn't argue if people have him a little lower in the tier.
Yeah, and some of it is also the perception of when ADP started forming for 2026. It was around the World Series. I mean, these are when drafts were kicking off, and it just makes sense that that is where he was placed. And his numbers were outstanding. I mean, there's really nothing I can come up with to say, oh, I'm not into Yamamoto here. Just a little feeling, little tickle in the back of my throat. By the way, I'm sorry, Mike.
Yeah, Yeah, I just want to say one other point is, you know, now the projections are coming out, and I'm not personally a huge projections guy, but I do see that some of the projections don't seem to like Yamamoto as much as some of the other starting pitchers. And, you know, I think as more projections come out, if his are kind of mediocre, I could see more kind of projection drafters passing on him and him falling back down a little bit.
Yeah, very good point. It's been a strategy since the beginning of Roto time, like investing in Dodger starting pitchers, especially when the prices might appear a little depressed. And of course, I think throwing off some of the prices here are the individual histories of these guys, the fact that we're not expecting anyone to really get 170 plus innings. But you're looking at these prices from a bird's eye view, like the title of your article there. Good job, Daniel Kelly. Tyler Glasnow is going at 113. Before him, Blake Snell at around 62. Emmett Sheehan at 120. And then Roki Sasaki at 257. I've seen him fall considerably. Just those prices just seem off. And it's not my Dodger bias. I mean, this is a phenomenal park. They're going to be playing, you know, the Rockies at home and, you know, Diamondbacks at home a ton. These guys are going to be racking stuff up. And there are some gems. There is profit to be made among these guys. So anyone you want to touch on from this group, your favorite, your least favorite?
Yeah, I mean, I think the reasons why maybe some of them are falling are not team related so much. I mean, with Glasnow, it's always the same thing. It's the injuries. I've been avoiding him for years with no regrets. He can't get past, you know, kind of 120, 130 innings. In many years, he's under 100. Honestly, although I did fall victim to him last year on a big team, Snell isn't that much different. I mean, he has like 280 inning seasons, but the rest of them, he battles injuries a lot. And sometimes, you know, he can have a slightly elevated whip, or at least elevated compared to some of the other aces where he's drafted near. I still think he's viable as an option, but I haven't clicked on him yet. Sheehan, I think the real risk with Sheehan is what his role is going to be. Is he guaranteed a rotation spot? Is it going to be, you know, is he going to get a chance to make 30 starts or in the high 20s? I'd like to say the answer is yes, and that talent will win out, because I think he's immensely talented. And of all the pitchers you've mentioned, to me, he seems the most desirable at cost, at least early going. But there is risk there. Whether he's still going to get a full season worth of starts, or are they going to, you know, kind of play games with him? Sasaki, I've been an avoid mostly, but I did grab him once when he fell into kind of like the early 300s. I got him, I think, around 21 in a DC. And I just figured at that point, let me just take a chance on the upside. But he did not impress last season as a starter. He looked better as a reliever. But even as a reliever, there were some red flags under the hood. And I just don't know that he can survive a full season pitching as a starter and excel. So I wouldn't take him unless he's, you know, pretty far down. I don't know. That's kind of how I see it. How about you?
It's hard to click on Snell, even though, you know, you'll probably get a sub 3 ERA. You probably could, you know, maybe luck into a full season of health. The whip, I do see people's concerns. You've got a higher-ish for an ace whip that is hard to stomach. But I think if you know it's coming with a, you know, like a 2.7 ERA and a whole mess load of strikeouts with the Dodgers and a shot at 20 wins, I think it's worth that risk. Glasnow is really a tough one. You're just betting on him getting more than 134 innings for the first time in his career. And he's been in the majors for quite some time. Sheehan is just an incredible future star. I think you just kind of bet on the talent and things will just sort of work out for him. 15.5% swinging strike rate last year. You know, amazing K to walk rate, just everything in his profile, you know, keeps the ball out of the park, just everything. He's a stud. So I do like him. And then I just feel like, you know, people are missing the boat on Roky Sasaki here. I mean, this is at this point going like in the mid 200s. This is the guy was, yeah, think about where he was. Think about how much has changed in this past year that we've gone from, you know, this guy is a top, you know, 50 overall pick, like, you know, top 15 pitcher based on his, you know, his, you know, pedigree from Japan. And then just coming over and just like what a young pitcher would normally struggle with, like a new world, a new environment, the bright lights, big city, you know, all in the midst of all these superstars. And he went through the injuries. And then towards the end of the year, we really saw him excel. Sure, there were some hiccups, some red flags that we saw. But, I mean, he got things done as the closer for the World Series. And obviously, there was no opportunity for him to do that this year with Edwin Diaz. But I think this gives him a little bit more confidence in himself because I think the talent is elite. I do think he's a, you know, top 15 straight-up pitcher once he can harness his control, his confidence, and all this stuff. I mean, think back, like he was literally, you know, like crying in public in early in the year. Like you could just tell how emotionally wrecked he was. So I think confidence, age, things will get better for him. I wouldn't be surprised if it is sort of a bumpy road this year, maybe with like in the rotation or, you know, there's a reason why he's priced where he is, but I think he can put himself in position for the following year to really have the big breakout that that everybody's looking for. I don't think he's going to be a bust.
Interesting. Yeah, no, I think he's a very divisive player. I think people are probably going to be, you know, it's certainly possible a year from now, people can be talking about how I can't believe he was available this late in drafts. I mean, that's a definite possibility. I think others, maybe myself included, who just haven't seen him look good as a starter, have a tough time kind of getting there.
That makes sense. It all makes sense. And then here with the rest of the team here, the relievers, I don't know. There's much to say here, but you've got Edwin Diaz, Tanner Scott, Alex Vesia, of course, fireballer Edgardo Henriquez, who's an absolute stud. And I will mention that Bobby Miller is not dead yet. I mean, probably for fantasy talk, but he's still around.
Yeah, he might be dead to me though. But so I guess the one question I'd have for you, you're the Dodgers fan. Does Dave Roberts seems to love actively managing his bullpens and playing matchups and stuff. Do you think that continues, or does he just say, okay, we got Edwin Diaz as long as his arm's not falling off, he's going to get the ninth inning every game?
Yeah, I think it's the latter. I think there will be times when, obviously, after back-to-backs, or there'll just be times when you know, Tanner Scott will become viable, or Vesia, or someone else will come in there and grab the save, one of the lefties, or Trinan might get a couple as well. But no, I'm not too worried. Not too worried. I think it'll be mostly Edwin Diaz. I don't think we're going to get, you know, one of these, you know, complicated pickles like we're getting from, you know, in Detroit, where they signed Kenley Jansen, but then, like, you know, one of the greatest closers of all time may not even close type scenario.
Right. Yeah. No, I know. It's been tough to kind of try to figure out how many saves Diaz is going to get. You know, you would think with being on such a strong team, he could be a 40 plus, maybe a 45 to 50 save guy, but, you know, just watching how Phillips manages the bullpen, you just kind of have this nagging thoughts in the back of your head that, you know, he pitched on a Monday and Tuesday night there's a couple of lefties in the ninth inning slated up, and next thing you know, Diaz is getting the eighth and Tanner Scott the ninth. I don't know. It probably won't come to fruition, but I guess we'll see.
Well, let's pivot in here in a different way into the San Diego Padres, and let's start at the back end there with the closer. So you've got Mason Miller. Is Mason Miller a preferred option for you over Edwin Diaz? Are those your top two closers right now?
I think they are my top two closers. I throw Munoz in the mix as kind of my top tier, maybe Duran too. But if I had to pick one right now, it's probably Mason Miller. Although I guess I should say that at the prices they're going in draft champions leagues, I haven't drafted either one of them. It's just, for me, too high a price.
Yeah, it's when we get to 12 team season and that's kind of already starting, those guys aren't going to be going 30, 33. I mean, they might in some drafts, but for the most part, the entire closer pool gets pushed down a little bit. But right now, if you're drafting those draft champions, if you want one of Edwin Diaz or Mason Miller, you're giving up a lot elsewhere and just, you're really digging in your heels. You're making a stand. And of course, what you get with that is the job security, the great opportunity for 40 plus saves, the elite ratios, 100 plus strikeouts. There's a lot of good you're getting for it, but it's each person's individual decision how they want to build, and taking a closer in the second or third pick is not for everybody.
Yeah, and I can get more comfortable in the third round. I guess I have a mental block about taking a closer in round two. But that's just me.
One of the fun things I'm always looking at is save opportunities per year, because thinking about the Dodgers, how I remember that I think in 2024 for a couple of seasons there, even though they were winning 100 plus games, 90 plus games, they were not at the top of save opportunities. It's probably a few years back where for whatever reason, I think there's sometimes a thought of like, well, these guys are, they're when they're beating everyone by wide margins, they have a large run differential. Like maybe these teams have less save opportunities. It was 2023. And in that year, the Dodgers ranked 23rd in save opportunities. But over the last couple seasons, they've been like top three basically. And that's just it's the wins, right? They're just up in games so much. In 2024, remember the Ryan Helsley season, the St. Louis Cardinals had the most save ops. It was 83. The Dodgers were next with 79, and nobody else was even close. It was in the low 70s. And then most teams, the median was 60, somewhere around there. And then last season, as far as save opportunities, it was the Phillies who had the most. They had 74, the Red Sox had 73, the Dodgers had 73. And then you had two teams with a lot less wins, the Angels and the Diamondbacks, they had 72 and 71. So, and then the Brewers, of course, is a team that we were used to, for whatever reason, always being in the mix with 70 plus save ops. They only had 66 last year. So do you ever look at that statistic to try to figure out saves?
Not that much, honestly. I think all else being equal, the better teams will have more saves. There's a narrative you could say that Dodgers and some other super strong teams may have more blowout wins, and so there are less save opportunities. But I guess it doesn't play a big factor for me until you get to the kind of the bottom 10 teams. And with those, I think sometimes you need luck to get the save opportunities. We'll get to the Rockies, but that's one of the concerns with, rostering, Rockies closers, just how many wins are they going to have?
Yeah, I think, the two separate things there. Those bottom teams and those save ops, those teams that you aren't going to win more than 60 games, those are usually good spots to just avoid altogether for me. And we're looking at the pool of those type of players, Rockies, Twins. It's messy. We probably don't want to touch those situations. And then I'll just basically double down on what you were saying. Like the whole, we don't want to get too tricky with trying to predict save opportunities and getting that granular and saying that, teams that blow out a lot of are not going to get as many save ops because they're also just winning more. They're scoring more runs. They're going to, those opportunities will be up there. So I don't think that should be a factor. I think it's a little bit of a fallacy. So just we'll chase those safe opportunities for the saves. Where do you want to go here on the hitters? Oh, let's touch on who we, you know, kind of who they lost, added there. Not a lot really going on. They've lost more than they've gained. The Padres, they've lost Ryan O'Hearn, Luis Arias. They declined Elias Diaz. They signed from the KBO Sungmin Song. And then, of course, they lost Dylan Cease, Nestor Cortez, Robert Suarez, their closer. And then they re-signed Michael King.
Yeah, no, they, I mean, the stories are that they're very concerned about finances. They were among the highest payroll teams for a number of years. And maybe with the change in ownership, the owner passed away and it's now relatives, and they were, they're looking to be a little more fiscally conservative. I don't hear that they're in on any other big free agents. In fact, I was a little surprised they were able to re-sign Michael King. I thought that was a good sign for them. They're an interesting team. I mean, they still have some pretty good pieces, but they're, seems like they're going to need help pitching.
Are you in on the Fernando Tatis Jr. market at his cost, considering the nice season he had last year? Of course, a little bit of a strong dip there in the middle of the year, if I recall. And then getting Jackson Merrill back is obviously going to be a big deal. Have you been drafting any Jackson Merrill shares? And where are you with like a home run, stolen base sort of projection range for him?
Yeah, so far I don't have any of Tatis or Merrill or even Machado. Tatis would be a consideration for me at, you know, in the back of the first round, but I think it would depend on who else is available at that time. Merrill, I'm not sure about. You know, he's had one season that was much better than we anticipated, and then a very disappointing season. I think he's going to bounce back in terms of average. I think he has some decent pop. I don't know if it's going to get much more than, you know, 20 to 25 home runs max with health, but I think he's going to put up good numbers. I think the only thing I'm particularly concerned about is just the running. He ran in the minors a little bit, you know, kind of mid-teens, a number of years in the minors, had 16 stolen bases as a rookie, and then last year, you know, missed about a quarter of the season, but he only was one out of three in stolen bases. And I think that kind of raises the question of, is he a double-digit steal guy or not, that you can count on or not? But I think he's going to be a good provider in terms of average, homers, probably runs and ribbies, like, you know, maybe 80 of each. I think he's a nice player, but without the speed, it kind of pushes him back a little bit in the outfield rankings, or at least mine.
I want to like Jackson Merrill at price, but I don't find myself clicking on him. I think his 80 ADP is very fair. I'm trying to remember who, don't have it in front of me, just like who the outfielders are. It's guys like Bellinger, Duran, Riley Green, Buxton. And it's kind of a group of outfielders. I'm not really drafting outfielders here in this range. And this is not just a bias. I will say it. I am not very bullish on the Padres in general this year. I think everything that's going on behind the scenes, a lot of stuff that we don't even know about, I think is going to affect things even more this season with them. And, you know, you do have some fiery personalities there, and I don't say fiery like in a, you know, good or bad way, just, you know, guys that, you know, the mood can swing things there. It can make for a troublesome locker room. And so I don't know. I'm just looking at all these guys. Like, I'm not that crazy about Xander Bogaerts at his price, or Laureano, or like, I don't see a lot of major profit on the hitting. And then if you're talking about the pitching, like, you know, a lot of things have to happen. I mean, Nick, you've got Pivetta, Musgrove, and Michael King. It's great, right? But they all have their own histories with injury and you know, after that, the rotation is bad. And yeah, I just don't know. I don't think I like the Padres very much.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good call. I think the rotation has a lot of question marks. I mean, King missed, you know, half the season last year. We think he's healthy. He presumably passed the medical before they signed him, but he's a big question mark. And then Musgrove missed the entire season, you know, recovering from Tommy John. He had the surgery during the 24 season. So he should be able to come back, but just how many innings he's going to be able to throw and will he be back to his old skill level remains to be seen. You know, I do think I like the way Pivetta looked last year. I guess maybe I might be a little more optimistic that he can repeat, but you know, that Randy Vasquez and JP Sears as your SP4 and 5 is kind of ugly. I don't have any interest in drafting either one of them. So, yeah.
And don't forget Kyle Hart and his 8.5 ERA.
KBR. Yeah, no, it's ugly, you know. And I think that's kind of, you know, one of the things I'm kind of still haven't put down in stone yet is Mason Miller. Like, it seems like they could or should consider trading him if they can get some starting pitching. Longer term, I mean, they, you know, they got Morjon and Estrada. I mean, I think Estrada could close for many teams right now. And no, they have a great bullpen. And you know, if they leave the bullpen as is and they get Jason Adam back at some point during the season, then you know, it's a very formidable bullpen and that can help out a weakish rotation considerably. But yeah, right now I don't like their pitching going into the season.
The ballpark, obviously the home park, half his starts there, Nick Pivetta, was a big boon for him. The man since 2017 had never had an ERA under 4. And he'd always been a high walk rate guy. He'd always given up a lot of home runs. And then getting a park, you know, like that really, really helped him. I mean, he pitched to a 2.87 ERA. His xFIP, his Sierra, was all about a run higher, which kind of makes sense, right? Even if you split the difference there, you're still getting good ratios out of him. I don't think anyone expects, you know, like lower than a 3.3. But what's been great with him is location, 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 as they say in real estate. He has completely transformed Nick Pivetta from like a 8, 9, 10% walk rate guy to under 7% the last two seasons, including that year in Baltimore. The location, it was just phenomenal. So I do still like Pivetta. You just got to like the pitchers that are good, that pitch well and are in San Diego. So I'm in for him. I like Musgrove. He was ready to pitch like in the playoffs last, or at least, you know, he's like, you know, he's been throwing. Yeah, he's been throwing for some time. And so that's why when you're looking at projections, they're probably a little bit more bullish than you would expect for a guy who hasn't pitched in a year and a half. And so for the price in the mid 200s, close to 300, I'm good with taking a shot there. And then Michael King, I think, is, you know, as long as he's healthy, I think he'll be great too. So to me, that's really the bright spot of Padres, like where you can potentially make fantasy profit is seems to me more likely with the pitchers.
I think that's right. Don't have much more to add to that.
How about the San Francisco Giants? Let's talk about them as we do so wonderfully, right? Because we can like do 2-3 hour pods here too, right? Like literally like an hour per team. We love to talk about fantasy baseball.
Yeah, I'm dangerous when you get me going like this.
the San Francisco Giants, really nothing of note. Daniel Susak up to pick to back up Patrick Bailey, literally the best defensive catcher in the game. The pitching side is where they've made some moves here. Two guys they've added to their rotation, very Giants-y moves, if you ask me. Adrian Hauser and Tyler Mahle. I always forget what kind of podcaster am I. Is it Male or is it Mahle? I think it's Male for
some reason. It's Mahle.
It's Mahle. Okay. And then Gregory Santos, Jason Foley, two guys that, you know, I had projected for saves last year. not to be closers, but for saves. Those guys are there in the organization now as well. But let's start with Rafael Devers. This is a guy whose price has been falling. He's in a ballpark for half his games that isn't necessarily enticing for fantasy profit. We just don't see guys crushing it, or people, drafters going crazy to draft, guys here in San Francisco. So where do you feel, what do you feel about Rafael Devers here? And let me just throw in one more. Are there any cases where you would draft a Willy Adames where he's going in the 100, 120 range, knowing what he does detrimentally to batting average?
Okay, first, Devers, I'm still in on Devers at cost, or especially if he drops. His average was a little less last year. He struck out more than he had been, which is a little disconcerting. But, the guy is mostly durable, played 163 games, still wound up putting up, big numbers, 35 homers, 99 runs, 109 ribbies. He had a ridiculous 56% hard hit rate, 16% barrel rate. I think he's still, I wouldn't put him at the top, but I think he belongs in kind of that first base tier with Harper and Olsen and those types of guys. I'm comfortable taking him, not necessarily a target, but comfortable. Adames, I'm open to taking him. Part of it is it's draft context. There's a ton of great shortstops, but then once you get to kind of like around 150 and you get to like Adames and Dansby Swanson, after that they kind of drop off a little bit. And so if I haven't taken a shortstop in the first 6-7 rounds and I feel like I have a good average base, I'm open to taking Adames, but he's not a target of mine. And yeah, if you do take him, you have to then bolster your average.
Yes, I'm just looking at these guys. I mean, looking at the last month of draft champions, these are the 50 round draft and holds, and their ADPs. You've got Rafael Devers at the 66 ADP. Willy Adames is at 133. Matt Chapman, 174. Elliot Ramos, 221. Junghoo Lee, 285. And really, that's it. There's just not a lot of excitement here. What about Bryce Eldridge going in the mid to late 300s? Kind of block there at first base. How long will he be utility? Is he somebody that is his upside muted a little bit in that ballpark? What do you feel about Bryce Eldridge?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think he's going to be a real good power hitter for them. He's not going as late as, you might think for someone with such limited experience. There's a lot of sharp people who have been on him or talking him up this offseason. I haven't heard much in terms of how San Francisco plans to utilize him. As you mentioned, he's UT only right now, and it's not clear to me whether he's going to get regular run at first base or if they're just going to keep Devers there and make Eldridge DH. Schwarber, this year Yelich. But when you get down to like someone like Eldridge, I'm not sure I want to tie up my UT slot for him if I'm not confident he's going to gain first base eligibility within a reasonable amount of time. So I've kind of been on the fence with him a little bit. Don't have any shares yet.
Yeah.
And of the other Giants you mentioned, I don't think there's a lot that really excites me. I think Younghoe Lee is now fallen to a part where on the right team, he represents a potential real value. I could think that I don't think the power will be there with him necessarily, but I could see him hitting for at least a plus average, probably not elite, but at least a plus average with some stolen bases that late in a draft would be worthwhile.
Yeah, he's the guy I like best there from this group at price. So an absolute target for me. And not just doubling down. I mean, just this there, I think getting a full season under his belt last year, it's his third year with the team. It's going to be a second full season. Hopefully a little bit less of moving him around. If you remember in the first half, like he was incredible, at least as far as, hitting over 300 and just getting on base and producing, even hitting the ball, decently hard for a little bit, and then really just tailed off, had a really huge slide and just didn't get there. So I definitely ate some crow with that, but it wasn't that expensive to begin with. And so he is somebody that I think is going to hit for a plus average, and I think you'll probably get some good BABIP luck with him this year. Elite contact guy for me, anyone over 86% is elite. He was at 88% last year and then has been at over 90% in the minor. So that I think definitely some value here in his skill set. Maybe he runs a little bit more. Maybe he could hit 295. So I think, one of the easier guys that we can kind of from this lineup kind of peg for a little bit of profit. What about the pitchers? Logan Webb. Then you drop down to Robbie Ray. Either of those guys interesting to you at cost? I feel like Robbie Ray is not very enticing to the draft market because he always seems to be available for me. Is it the whip?
Yeah, I'm kind of in that boat. And honestly, I feel the same way about Webb. I just have not clicked on him. I mean, there's a lot to like with him. He is now Mr. Durable. At least 32 starts for the last four seasons, at least 200 innings the last three, double-digit wins the last five seasons. Last year, probably the best thing I saw was that he upped his strikeout rate from 20.5% to over 26%. So, while maintaining very good control, so there's a lot to like with him. What I kind of struggle with is the last two seasons, including last year, which may have been his best season, his whip has been 1.23 and 1.24. And, for most leagues, you need a lower whip to kind of get where you want to go and to be taking kind of a minus whip pitcher as your SP1 or 2, for me, is difficult to do. So I don't have any shares of Logan Webb at this point. Kind of the same thing about Robbie Ray.
Yeah, I feel like he got he kind of had his big upside. I guess his big it's not a breakout year because he's just been so good for a long time. But with the wins up there, just everything to me just seemed like a little bit of an outlier season. If I was in an innings pitched league, he'd be my first pick. But that's not the case. I think The wins upside is limited. The whip is an issue. I think the Ks were a little bit high last season. I don't know if they maintain. I liked Robbie Ray. I feel like I like him a little bit more than the market. I think he just had so many starts. He's one of those pitchers that because you see some of those games where he's really inconsistent from game to game. Like, Baseball HQ, they have their, their dom and dis, dominant starts and disaster starts. And, I haven't seen the forecaster yet this year. I don't know if it's out, but you could just smell the diss on Robbie Ray, the dom and the diss. It's like, eight blocks. And then the next game's a shutout. He was, the ultimate, tough player to try to time for DFS, especially. So I see the hesitancy there, but I do think he will be okay. And then, you just know one of Adrian Hauser or Tyler Malley are going to just find some way to, just find fantasy value throughout the season. We'll see. I really don't know those guys.
Yeah, they were both kind of off my radar, but finding with the Giants, I guess they come into play as maybe a late round bench pitcher or streaming option.
And then the closer there, Ryan Walker, at least the de facto closer, and they're going to sign somebody else like a David Robertson or, hopefully not Sir Anthony Dominguez, because I really do think that guy stinks. But I think Ryan Walker is capable of holding it down. I mean, he was an elite reliever the previous two seasons, especially in 2024, where he made 76 appearances and just had like a, insane, 26% K to walk rate and a 0.85 whip. So I do like Ryan Walker. He's not as bad as, like, if you Google search, or I'm sorry, Twitter X search Ryan Walker, you'll just find a bunch of Giants fans just saying Ryan Walker sucks. But, you know, when you're closer to that action and you see it in real life, or there's this one start that you remember for some game that you went to and he blew up, you think a lot worse than he actually is. So, but I think Ryan Walker is capable. I just don't know what the Giants are going to do with who they sign.
Yeah, well, I thought that they would have signed someone else to be their closer by now. But as you mentioned, there really isn't anyone left. I mean, they can maybe trade for Trevor McGill, who may be available. But, you know, Sir Anthony Dominguez, if he's the top relief pitcher who's still a free agent, I'm not crazy about that signing either. So, yeah, I do think right now Walker's going to looks to be the guy. I mean, maybe the fans hate him a little more than deserved, but he took a real step back last year. His strikeout rate and swing strike rate cratered on him. So I don't know. He certainly has the ability to bounce back, and he was very effective in 23 and especially 24, but I guess there's a little more uncertainty now coming off a weak season.
There's a guy on this roster, in this bullpen, who is electric. And for whatever reason, when I first started researching, I just kind of glanced past it and thinking, oh, is that just Joel Piñeiro back again? But no, it's Joel Piñeiro, a 28-year-old who has been in so many organizations all through the minors over the last few years, between Tampa, Colorado, Washington, Detroit, lands in San Francisco, made 17 appearances last year, throwing 99, 100-mile-per-hour heat, a nice three-pitch mix. And then if you look at his actual strikeouts, or his strikeout rate, which is 20%, it from last season, it is not reflective of his, you know, his stuff and his skill level. Like, this is a, you know, not quite a Randy Rodriguez, I guess you could say, but this guy looks good. It's the control. That's the thing that's always been a problem with fireballers like this. He's been anywhere between 11-15% over the last few years. But that is a name I've been targeting late in drafts, because this guy could definitely sneak some saves.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think, it remains to be seen what type of pitcher he is and if he can, you know, be an effective setup guy for Walker to start the season. But taking some spec shots on San Francisco seems like a good strategy in DCs.
Let's talk Arizona Diamondbacks here. The Arizona Diamondbacks, they haven't really signed anybody. They re-signed Merrill Kelly. They added Michael Soroka. So a little bit of movement there on the rotation. There are some Bregman rumors. But, you know, this the offense. And there, of course, there are the Ketel Marte getting shipped out rumors. So a lot to touch on here between Corbin Carroll, a first-rounder, Geraldo Perdomo's incredible leap into first round fantasy status last year, or first round returning value. Anywhere you want to start with these Diamondbacks?
Yeah, let's start with Ketel Marte. I mean, I think he's a stud hitter at a weak position, but the trade rumors are significant. And I guess one positive thing is there was a news report recently that the Diamondbacks don't want this to linger, and they're going to, you know, kind of draw these discussions to a close soon, one way or the other. It, for me, at least for fantasy purposes, it's made me hesitate a little bit in recent drafts in terms of clicking on either Corbin Carroll or Geraldo Perdomo. I think it's important to remember that this was a very strong offense, and last year they, you know, Lourdes Gurriel suffered a major injury, and he's going to miss probably most of this season. They lost Christian Walker. They lost Eugenio. No, I'm sorry, not Christian Walker. They lost Naylor, who was hitting in the middle of the lineup, and then they lost Eugenio Suarez, both of whom wound up with Seattle. So that's three big bats missing from last year. You take out Ketel Marte, and I'm just not sure that there's enough around Perdomo and Carroll to warrant them being drafted as high as both of them are lately.
Yeah, they were a losing team last year in baseball. It seemed like they were playing better than that for me for some reason. I mean, they did have a slight plus run differential, plus six. But yeah, they were 80 and 82. And I'm also I like individual pieces, I guess, from this roster. But I just not knowing what's going to happen with Ketel Marte. You know, Naylor's not on the team anymore. I don't think Perdomo comes close to what he did last year. He's a tough click for me. Corbin Carroll's just fine. But right now they've got Gabriel Moreno, no power guy, slated as their cleanup man. That's obviously not something that's going to happen. It's a pretty weak offense. I mean, Pavin Smith, Blaze Alexander, Del Castillo. I don't like it. I don't like it. I don't see how they sniff 80 wins. They don't have a bullpen. You know, the closers are dicey as hell. I like a couple things from on a fantasy level, but I'm just looking at this division overall, thinking about how close it was last year, where the Dodgers had 93 wins, the Padres were 90, and then you had the Giants and Diamondbacks at 81 and 80. I don't see a lot that I like here. I see a lot of Dodgers domination in this division.
Yeah, you know, baseball has a way of surprising us, and so it may not be, you know, completely smooth sailing for the Dodgers, but I don't think the Diamondbacks are going to be challenging anyone. It looks like they're poised to take a major step back. As you mentioned, you know, they don't have a closer. Andrew Salafranc, I guess, is considered by many to be the current closer. Kevin Ginkle, this bullpen was screaming to add someone, add one, you know, one established relief pitcher to close out games, and they didn't do that. You know, Merrill Kelly is fine, good for them for re-signing him, but I mean, is he the ace, or Ryan Nelson is now the ace? I mean, the rest of the starting rotation looks pretty sketchy to me, and really, you know, half the starting lineup is well below average. The bottom half of the batting lineup looks, you know, weak, for lack of a better description. So I don't think this team is going anywhere, honestly.
Yes, I'm with you there. I've got a couple of players here. I want to touch on them in a later podcast. And plus, I've got some stuff behind our paywall at F10 Fantasy that I want to save for there, as far as I think some fantasy goodness, some profit possibilities. And then on the pitching staff side, you know, maybe I like some of the improvement that that Ryan Nelson made as an established starter last year. I do think a 37-year-old Merrill Kelly should be fine around his 220-250 ADP. For the most part, I don't like it. I don't like what I'm seeing here in Arizona. And then Dre Jameson is a really good pitcher, just has an absolute massive issue with staying healthy. But he's a former first-round pick back in 2019. So he's just a kind of deep league reliever, you know, 50th-round pick to keep an eye on. I do think Kevin Ginkle, he's the top righty in that pen. I think if he's healthy, he's probably the best bet for saves. He has the experience and everything. It's pretty gross. Speaking of gross, let's get grosser. The Colorado Rockies. I started digging into something when I saw it. I was just looking at the standings from last season, and I looked at the run differential. When I told you about Arizona being plus six, the Colorado Rockies were minus 424. I've gone back like 10 years, and I still haven't found anyone anywhere close, like in the 400s negative. You know, the White Sox 2 years ago, they were around 300. The Tigers 3 years ago were 333, whatever. But this is bad, bad. They gave up 1,000-plus runs. It stinks. So on the pitching side, there's literally nothing to talk about. The closer side, probably nothing either. So it's really just the hitters there.
Yeah. No, and you know, there are some hitters that I think are worth considering for fantasy, or who at least shouldn't be written off. You know, I guess the top guy is Hunter Goodman. He had a fantastic season. You know, maybe it got lost for some people given how bad they were, but you know, he played 144 games, had 31 homers, 91 RBIs, and hit .278. Now I don't think you should, that drafters should count on the 278 repeating, but I think his power seems pretty legit. And at the catcher position, that's you know, elite in terms of power. So I think he's, you know, definitely a very fantasy relevant player. Brenton Doyle, you know, he had a fantastic 2024 season. He had some personal tragedy last year, and it certainly seemed to impact his performance. But I think the power and speed are still there. The average may be sketchy, but it'd be great if he could get back into the leadoff or top third of the lineup in terms of runs. But, yeah, there's not much else that really – you know, Jordan Beck isn't a bad late outfielder. You could do worse than power and speed. And then you got Tovar, who I think is a tough guy to figure out. You know, I thought he'd have a little more speed. He doesn't. And even when he runs, it's not too successful. He kind of seemed to sell out for power in 24, and he did hit 26 homers and looked pretty good. But it wasn't working last year. He had 9 home runs. Here's a guy who just, he swings at everything. And, I'm not sure what he is. I don't think he's going to be a plus average. He's not going to be a big speed guy. The lineup is sketchy enough that I'm not sure he's ever going to be a big contributor in runs and ribbies. And I'm not sure if he's a 25 home run guy. He might be a little of everything, and with that, its value where he's going, the price is more attractive than it has been, but I haven't gotten excited to take him.
You know what's crazy about Ezekiel Tovar? I hadn't really noticed. He's 24 years old.
he's still young. Yeah, maybe I shouldn't be kind of talking about him as a completed player.
Oh, no, I think you're right. I think you nailed it. I'm just saying it from a perspective of, like, it's just crazy to me when I see some of these guys have been around forever. It's like, Joe Adell's been in the league for 13 years, just turning 22, you know. You kind of nailed it. You know what he is. He's a very low walk rate, walk guy, kind of high strikeout, swings at everything, some of the worst, you know, O-swing in baseball. He can barrel it a little bit, you know, like right around – you know, league average. He could hit 20 home runs. And just by being in there in the lineup every day, I mean, he was hurt for a good chunk of last year. I mean, he had less than 400 plate appearances, less than 100 games. So it's one of those accumulators, I guess you could say. Jordan Beck made some really great strides last season. I think he could be a 2020 guy. I think Mickey Moniak finally found some confidence, a former first overall pick of the Phillies back in 2016. So I think he fits in that lineup just fine. Brenton Doyle is really the guy I like the best out of all of them. Can hit some home runs, can steal bases, can kind of do it all. He's going to be an everyday guy. Zach Veen will be back in our lives. I'm sure we'll be all bidding triple digits on him again. Not everyone, but some. And other than that, yeah, I mean, you know, we're just going to stream Rockies in our deeper leagues, right? Like a little Troy Johnson here, a little Blake Crim in my life, a little bit of Braxton Fuller. Not as my wife. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I think the interesting story with the Rockies last year was, for fantasy at least, was that, you know, for years people have tried to stream Rockies hitters when they're at home, and that made sense. And, you know, maybe in certain individual cases it still makes sense. But, you know, in the past you would want to bench kind of your mid-level and lower starting pitchers when going to Colorado. And last year, you know, it took me a little bit to realize, I guess, how bad they were. But, you know, for the most part, I started kind of streaming against the Rockies, even at home. And so that's kind of a difference that is kind of new for folks who've been playing fantasy for a long time like us.
Yeah, it's a bad team, and I didn't even mention Chris Bryant, who, now that Anthony Rendon is out of the picture, it's now Chris Bryant, worst contract in baseball. Of course, he's got a degenerative disc disease, and you got to hope for the best. He's always been a good guy, unlike Rendon, who has not always been a good guy. But that's a completely different topic, different pod. And then they have a top prospect, Charlie Double Condon. He is their number two prospect. He is a stud, somebody that you've seen people drafting in DCs as well. Other than that, it's pretty boring. So that was a good overview there. When you give us enough time, you give us 20, 30 minutes per team, we'll really break it down for you. But this is fun, Mike. Thank you for joining.
Oh, my pleasure. Yeah, I think we can, fill out any time slot necessary to talk teams. Once we get going, it's tough to stop. But hopefully we gave some folks something to think about.
And, of course, Mike, we will continue to have you on as Jason Anthony awakens from his football slumber. I did see him sign up for a 400 DC. So, it's...
Yeah.
Starting to brew, so we'll get Jason back in the mix here. Of course, we'll have Mike and other people from the team. Dan Thompson will continue with his bullpen podcast. We'll have Joe Arrico, Adam Young. We'll have some other special guests throughout the year. So thank you, Mike. Happy New Year, sir.
To you as well, and to all our listeners.
For Mike Mager, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.